Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Leonard Johnson from Blog Talk Radio Show and the Triple Wing Hammer Report. And glad to see you here tonight. I'm sorry about the difficulty, but we're having some strange weather here. We're under a tornado watch, and so the wind and everything is going on and everything. So I'm going to try to get as much as we can in tonight by going through some of the introduction. I try to get it on the back end. So let's see if we can get our guests on. Let me tell you a little bit about our guest. I'm Chad Smith, who is presently the head football coach at Pickens High School. And I've known Chad for about 4 or 5 years. We see each other in passing at the clinics and everything. And we exchange some pleasantries most of the times on Facebook when we got a thing. But a dynamic coach, and he really piqued my interest because I had no idea that this young man is a master at turning around programs. But the one thing that caught me about it is how does he do it and increase the participation in this program. So let's see if we can get Chad on and see if we can get rolling here. Let me press a button here. Chad, are you there?
Yeah,
Yes, sir, I am. Can you hear me?
Hey, I hear you fine, man. How's everything going?
It's going well. I'm actually, you talked about bad weather, I'm actually driving on 85 right now, going from Clover to Pickens, and you are correct, the weather is terrible in South Carolina right now.
Yeah, I know. It's, it caught me by surprise, you know, with the tornado warnings they had down this and in the Orangeburg area. And I look like something nasty is heading this way. So we're going to get started here, Ted. Again, I appreciate you coming on the show. You know, when I started reading about you when you got the Pickens job, I got excited. I said, all right, now, you know, I thought I was good at what I did, but man. You're the monster.
I don't know about that, Coach. You're pretty dang good. So I just we're just trying to get by.
Let me start off by doing this. You know, a lot of people are familiar with you in the South Carolina area and some parts of North Carolina. But this thing is being recorded, so a lot of guys across the country are going to pick up on this and everything. You want to tell people a little bit about yourself?
Well, yeah, sure. I'm originally from Pickens, South Carolina, which is one of only two or three mountain high schools in the state of South Carolina. Was really blessed to earn a football scholarship at Concord University in Athens, West Virginia, and went up there and played redshirted. So I played my 5 years and met my wife up there. And then we moved, and I got hooked up with B.W. Holt, who's the third winningest coach in North Carolina history. He hired me at West Montgomery High School in Troy, North Carolina, and we, using his program, we turned that high school around, and they're still a power today in North Carolina. And then he took the Rocky Mount High School job and brought me on as assistant head coach, and we were there for 4 years. Had unbelievable success. I think we went 48-10 in 4 years. Once again, using his program. And then I was 27 years old, and I thought I invented football. And I took my first head coaching job at Northern Nash and in Rocky Mount. We were very successful getting players out and very successful from a community standpoint, but the wins weren't quite what we wanted. After 2 years, I decided I wanted to – I've got four boys now, but at the time, my wife and I had two, and we wanted to get closer to family. So we moved after the 2008 season down to Easley, South Carolina, and I actually took 1 year off football. And then I got the Easley head coaching job in 2010. I think the program was 1-21 the 2 years prior to us getting there. We ended 3 years at Easley at 29-9. Had a great run, had great coaches, had great players. And then Clover High School called. And Clover High School, for those of you that don't know, is money's not an issue there. Great community, great place, and they kind of made an offer that I couldn't refuse after the 2012 season. But they were 0-11 and only had 36 kids in a 5A program still playing football. So we went there, and it was difficult, but after 4 years, we made the playoffs, had a winning record, up the participation to 136 kids, and really had a great job. And at the end of this past season, Pickens High School called me, which is where I graduated from, and the principal was a good friend of mine in high school. The superintendent, Pickens County, was my principal when I was at Easley High School, and it was too good of an opportunity to pass up. Finally getting to go home. I'm actually driving to my parents' house in Northern Pickens County now, to stay with them for a couple of days while I get some stuff straight here. But, it's always humbling when you get to come back home, and very exciting. So myself and my family are looking very much forward to what the future has for us.
Now, you said that you got married. You married your college sweetheart?
Hannah, the former Hannah Ashton, we got married in college, so she was inducted into our College Hall of Fame this past football season. She was a soccer player, and my boys keep on hounding me when I'm going to get inducted, and I had to break it to them that I wasn't near the athlete that Mama was. But, married my college sweetheart, and I guess we got married in 2003, so, rock and roll this thing going on 14 years, and four sons, and wouldn't trade it for the world.
I know you wouldn't.
I haven't met your wife yet, but I can almost guarantee you that you married up, like most of.
Oh, without a doubt, I outkick my coverage. There's no doubt.
That's good, man. And you say you got four boys.
Yes, sir. The oldest one's 11, and the youngest one will turn 4 this Wednesday. So, yeah, there's never a dull moment at the Smith household. That's for sure.
How do you balance all that? I mean, you got the kids.
I've got
a lot of pressure.
I married a great woman. Honestly, she's a military brat, so she understood, you know, moving and, you know, the part about kind of being a single mom during football season. She's a strong, independent woman, and it never has fazed her. So, you know, I could not do what I do if I hadn't got a woman like Hannah. And, you know, we're both very, and I know this is nationwide or whatever, but we're both very strong Christian people. We put our faith in the good Lord, and, you know, and He's blessed us. So, really, that's how we balance it. I mean, half the time we don't get to see each other because we're running around like chickens with our head cut off. But, you know, it's a fantastic deal having a large family and getting to see those boys grow up. And now, since I'm going back to Picking, you know, having those boys around their grandparents, around their cousins, it's truly a blessing, going to be a very good thing.
That's good. Now, what was the former coach there, Bill? Not this one. I'm going way back.
Bill Isaacs,
yes.
Coach Bill Isaacs.
Yeah,
yes,
my first football game as a head coach was against Coach Isaac. When I was at C. A. Johnson, and
okay.
that was an eye waiting right there. I know he was running that old wishbone. He was running that old wishbone back in the day, and he wishbone us all the way back to Columbia. I tell you that.
Oh, absolutely. And he, you know, anytime Pickens has been good, they've been a run-based offense. And Coach Isaacs was a master in that wishbone. It was a beautiful thing to watch.
Yes, it was. Now, when I first heard of you, I think you sent me a message or something, and you were running some sort of single wing, I believe. You were running the single
wing? Yeah, absolutely. Well, I had researched you, actually, and when I got to Easley, and I'm not trying – what I do when I take over a program, I load up the defensive side of the ball with assistance. And at Pickens, I'm blessed because we have some great offensive assistance. But at Easley, you know, we put most of our stuff on the defensive side of the ball, and I needed an offense that really one or two people could coach. And I was a wing T guy, and I got a couple of Hugh Wyatt videos and kind of fell in love with double wing. But I had a really good quarterback, and I didn't want to cheat him, and we needed to open it up some. And that year, I think you were at Scott's Branch, and y'all were playing Wilson Elko in the state championship game. And Andy Twato was my defensive coordinator, who's in charge of the weekend of champions in South Carolina. So I tagged along with Andy, and we watched how you were shifting from that, you call it cowboy shift or whatever you want to do, and going into the different things. And I knew you were big on clinics, and I was actually requesting information on the single wing conclave. Now, I ended up not going because I was speaking at a clinic in Lynchburg, Virginia with Rick Darlington. And the Easley Touchdown Club was very gracious, and we took Rick out for supper after the clinic. And me and him got to sit down for about 6 hours. And we installed that single wing at Easley. And it was good. I mean, it served its purpose. I didn't like it as well as I did the double wing. And we went back to that the next year. But, and we scored a ton of points with it. I mean, it was quality.
Yeah, it's a fascinating offense. I read all the books about the old timers and everything. And, one time I woke up and say, gosh, this is what these college guys are doing right now.
Oh, you're right. You're 100% right. That's all it is.
That's all they're doing, single wing concepts, you know. But of course, they can't call it single wing because they'll get ran out of Dodge. But, yeah. that's funny. That's another story there. But you got that concept. And what I always say is that any team that runs a wing is a dangerous team because they got so many things that can happen with a wing team versus the defense. So you stuck with the double wing. I know when you went to Clover, you took over for what's my man name? Jet. Jet wasn't there then, but you took over for the other guy.
No.
I took
over for John Devine. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, but Jet was the one who brought who got that single wing going down there in Clover. And,
yeah.
Did you go back to it or what? When you got there?
Well, we were double wing my first 2 years at Clover. And then Clover, you know, is in a very difficult conference, and we were moving to 5A, and I had B.W. Holt, the guy I learned from, was a wing T guy. So, and he's actually I don't know if you're familiar with Coach Bill Hayes, that was, you know, the Winston-Salem State legend and everything else, but Coach Holt ran. Okay, good. Well, Coach Holt, Bill taught Coach Holt single wing, wing T. So we actually still run the Bill Hayes version of the wing T. So, like, when you hear it, all our terminology is from Coach Hayes. But we shifted into that to open us up a little bit because what teams were doing, they'd have in that league around the Rock Hill area, most of them would have a stud outside linebacker. They'd play, like, as a wide nine technique, and then they'd have a very athletic corner behind him, and they would just cut the rest of our linemen. So we struggled hitting the edges because at Clover we weren't quite as fast as most of the teams we play. When we got into the wing T, when you had the 2 foot splits, we could kind of gash some people. And that's kind of what I've seen. That's what we've transitioned into just from a competitive standpoint. Plus, I probably know the wing T better, learning it from BW, and that's what I've coached most of my career. So if somebody throws something funky at us, I know how to adjust. And so we stuck with wing T the last 2 years at Clover, and it really benefited us. And that's what we'll be running at Pick.
Okay, gotcha. Now, how did your kids make the adjustment? I think they had to go from an option team to back to the wing. Was it much?
Yeah, at Clover, that's what we did.
Yeah.
It was an easy – honestly, Clover was probably the easiest transition I've ever had because those kids had grown up running Jet system, which he was a strict Hugh Wyatt double wing guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when they really were uncomfortable running the option. So when I got the job, it was kind of – I mean, it was a very smooth transition. Those kids were born and raised running foot to foot. And, you know, come off. So, it was like it easily when I took over, they were a Tony Franklin team before we took over. And at Pickens, they were spread last year. So, you know, getting them back in stances and firing off the ball and stuff is a different type of monster than a kid that's done it his whole life.
I feel your pain right now.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going through.
Yeah,
going
you know,
at
Lake
right
Marion. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right now,
so, the good thing is, you know, we kind of get, as wing coaches, we kind of get stereotyped, even though most of us are extremely successful. You kind of have that, oh, that's a wing guy type deal. But the good thing is, at a place like Pickens and a place like Clover, they want that physical brand of football.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's what makes it kind of exciting going into the Pickens situation. Because Pickens kids are naturally just freaking tough kids. And and that's what really makes me excited about the potential there. So I really can't wait to get started, to be honest with you.
And that you just made a great point there, Chad, because a lot of guys look at running a wing offense and everything, and then they give it a year. Then they say, well, offense doesn't work. But what they got to realize is that they got to toughen those kids up because most of the time you come in there, these kids are used to spread stuff. You know, they used to backing up instead of going forward. And you just got to take your time with it, you know, and get it right.
Absolutely.
You know, and be very, very patient with it.
Yes.
Do you throw the ball much out of your wing?
I haven't. BW always used to say that you need to throw it 12 to 15 times a game. Honestly, mm-hmm. in my career, I've probably, when we've been really, really good, I've probably averaged throwing it 4 to 8 times. Mm-hmm. I'm working on that, trying to get it more. I would like to get it 12 to 15 because I think if you can do that, it's kind of a booger to prepare for. And last season, honestly, we got really good at running waggle. And, you know, people want to talk about RPOs all, you know, now. But that run-pass option, in my opinion, waggle was the original RPO. Because
it
if
was.
You've got a quarterback that can move and he's attacking that edge with good, you know, with good guard play outside, that play can be dang near impossible to stop. So,
yeah, you got the
right. Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's – no, you're fine. And I talked with – I don't know if you met Lou Johnson up in Virginia. I called him at the end of last season, and he's got a really good quick game that we actually installed and won us a few games this year. So, and it's very simple to teach, a little three-step game, and you just read open window, closed window, and go from there. But I would like to throw it between 12 and 15 times a game, loosen some people up a little bit so they're not throwing 9 in the box. But at the same time, we're going to be a running team. And if I'm picking up 5 yards of carry running buck sweep, we're probably not going to run anything else.
Exactly. You know, and I think that's what people get very impatient with. You know, I tell the kids, you know, all the time, we got this elaborate game plan. But if I see they can't stop a hammer, we're going to be on that dude all night. You know,
absolutely.
Yeah, I pull the game plan and put it in my back pocket, you know, because, you know,
yeah.
You just got to be patient. And it looks
yes.
boring and everything, but when you're putting 35 to 40 points up on the board, it's not as boring as you think it is, you know?
You're 100% correct. 100%.
How do you get your community to buy into you?
Well, you know, anywhere I've ever been, it's a little bit easier, I think, for me because I do have kids and they are very active. So, you know, we're very involved in the rec program because our kids play rec sports. I've always been involved at the elementary levels, but it's easier when your kids go to school there. you know, I'm not going to claim the idea, but Jeff Tate at Wren High School had his kids opening car doors on Friday mornings at his feeder schools. He did it during home games. I do it during every game. We send our kids out to do that. We visit, and you have to make this optional, but we visit a church in the community every year as a team. And that has been a huge success because people just want to see you. And, you know, every coach is going to say they love their players, and I believe most coaches in that. But, you know, at the same time, my family, our source of entertainment are the high school sporting events, wherever we are. So we're going to be there. People see you. And you know, I'm going to find out what my players are interested in. And I'm going to try to, like, if a kid were to get baptized at church,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to be there. Okay. If a kid is singing a special at a church, I'm going to be there to listen to them. If, you know, if a kid is in chorus and they're singing in a concert, me and my boys are going to be there supporting them. And when parents see that, they understand that you really do care and it's not just lip service. And then the community most time gets behind you. We also have churches feed our team before all the pregame meals, and I allow a pastor there to give an optional devotion during that. And, you know, for the most part in the South and small towns, people love that. And we start a mom and a dad's club. The mom's club's in charge of getting those churches to feed us, and then the dad's club help the coaches paint on Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, no parents are ever involved in our game plan, but, you know, they get a sense of ownership. And I want those parents understanding that we got an open door, you know, communication thing. I'll never discuss playing time, but, you know, I know what it's like to have my son coached by somebody else, okay? And I want to be able to trust that person. And once you earn the trust of the parents, then you have the community. And that's the main thing that you have to get through. You got to make sure they know that you have the best interest of their son at heart and that you truly care about him as a person. And then you basically have the community in the palm of your hand.
Mm-hmm. And that goes into what we're going to talk about later on into the show.
Okay.
About how you increase your student participation. Because if you got mom and daddy with you, they're going to be your best ambassadors. But we'll talk about that
yes.
in a few minutes.
Okay, not a problem.
Yeah. Now, you
seem to have a hell of a good off season going on. Would you mind sharing with the audience what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, every school I've coached at, we've really been blessed to get all our kids in weightlifting or in a football class.
So you have a class.
Pickens High School has a football class. Clover did not. Clover just had weightlifting. But we get all our kids in there. And, you know, we have a very intense strength program. It's the warm-up alone is really, really good. You know, from a warm-up standpoint, when our kids walk in the door, and we've already installed this at Pickens, but the first thing they're going to do, they run a half a mile. And I know this goes against conventional wisdom with the fast twitch muscle and everything, but I want tough kids. So, you know, they run, before they stretch or anything, they run a half mile. We want them in under 4 minutes. They come in. We do four sets of 25 team jumping jacks. And it has to be on a three count, and they have to stay together to build team unity. If they don't stay together, we start back from one.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then every week, we increase that by five until we get four sets of 50. And then we give them about a 20-second break to recover in between each thing. After that, we do a push-up circuit where you change your grip on your push-ups from regular grip to knuckle to diamonds to fingertip push-ups. We start at 10 and go down a ladder. So you do like 10 regular grip push-ups, 9 knuckles, 8 diamonds, 7 fingertips, and you count all the way down to 1. Okay, during the second week, you'll go down to 2, and then the last set will be 10. Then the third week, you go down to 3, and then the last two sets are 10, and you build up until you're doing 10 sets of 10 push-ups. Then after that, we do what we call a Wake Forest core routine, and it's kind of like yoga mixed with a plank routine. If anybody's interested, they can email me, and I'll send me that. That's a little bit hard to discuss over the radio. But then after that, we do what we call 6-minute abs, and they lay down. They do 30-second sit-ups, 30-second crunches, 30-second scissors, 30-second leg lifts, 30 seconds of in and outs where you bring your knees in your chest and back out, and then 30 seconds of toe touch, and then repeat the cycle with no break in between. As soon as they get finished with that, they run another half mile in 4 minutes. And then they do a little stretch, and then we get started with the lifting. But they're going to do that every day they're in that class. And you know, they get, you know, I don't know if your teams have competed, but, you know, in South Carolina we have the region strength meets, the state strength meet. And my kids at Easley and Clover actually got to the point where they went max until they had done that warm-up. Because they felt like they needed to do it to, you know, reach their strength potential. So when you've got kids that are willing to do, basically run a mile, a push-up circuit, an ab circuit, and a yoga thing before they ever touch a weight, then you've got pretty tough kids, and you can go from there. But that's our lifting. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, that's the warm-up portion.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to take you between 20 and 25 minutes.
That's what I was about to ask. That's just warm up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
all
just
right.
Warm up. And then we're going to concentrate on the big lifts. And I believe on lifting all whistle, We're going to concentrate on squat, bench, and deadlift. And then we get, now I'm different. We use Power Clean as like an auxiliary. We're going to get really strong on the big three strength movements. And then we're going to roll from there. And, you know, our sets, most of the time we do three to five sets of stuff, anywhere between five and one rep. Just depends on the part of the cycle we're on. And then we're going to do actually kind of a CrossFit circuit at the end of each class, just depends on the day, to get some competition and some conditioning in. So, you know, we get after that pretty good. Now, I'm also, I kind of strongly suggest that our kids play two, if not three, sports.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we try to funnel kids into wrestling and track as much as we can. To build that fast twitch muscle fiber and to build toughness on a wrestling mat. But, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with playing baseball, soccer, you know, tennis, anything else that you're good at, just to build that competitive fire year-round. And
you don't keep your kids captive all year.
Absolutely. Well, and the thing is, what a lot of coaches, at least in South Carolina, what I've found is grades are better because the head coach of that program is going to be checking on their grades along with you. And
exactly.
I'm sorry, when kids are active and if they're a horse's rear in class, they know they're going to see that coach after school. And that's huge just for accountability. So, and you know, plus in, you know, in some of the schools I've worked, especially in Eastern North Carolina, we were poor. And at least when you were with track or something, you knew the kids were going to get fed twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you knew where those meals were coming from after school. And, you know, if you're working in a poor school district, a lot of times that's the most important thing. Because if little Johnny's worried about where his next meal's coming from, he ain't going to be concentrating on football near that much.
You got that right. You know, and each program is different. And I think sometimes that as coaches sometimes, we try to mirror our program versus the have and the have-nots. When,
yes.
You know, some of the things we can't do that the big schools do, you got to be very creative into some things.
Absolutely.
And, you know, to be effective. You know, we would love to do some of that stuff, but you know, practically we can't do it, and we have to adjust, you know, to do certain things. How many coaches do you have working in your off season?
In our off season?
Yeah.
I mean, most of my coaches everywhere I've been coach multiple sports, so it just depends on availability. I mean, you know, at Clover we're really blessed. We had 12 coaches on staff, and like I said, that's a 5A high school. So, you know, we were, you know, but really there's not much going on after school other than those other sports going on because we get all our kids through the day. Now, at Pickens, we're going to offer an after-school thing, and we're about to go through coaching sign-ups, but I expect my coaches to be there if they have nothing else to do. And that's just one of the things about working with me. You're going to be visible. And those kids are going to see you putting in the time and effort. If not, you're not going to be working with us very long.
Exactly. What do you look for? You've been doing it long enough, and, you know, you got some scars to go with this. What are you looking for? What are you looking for in a coach?
As an assistant?
Yeah.
Number one thing is loyalty. Honestly, I've fired two coaches in my career, and that was why, with both of them. As long as you're loyal and you're a hard worker, we can teach you the game of football. And now I want smart guys around me, and I want people that are willing to voice their opinion. I want yes men around me. But when we step out of that coach's office, our vision better be very clear. It better be consistent. And you know, as long as that goes, I don't care if you're young, old, rich, poor, white, black, whatever. You know, we can roll with it. And and that's really been, and I mean, I've really been blessed. I mean, most guys buy into that concept. And I've had some really, really quality staffs. But I would say loyalty and hard work, knowledge is a very distant third for me. Because, you know, you can get somebody that knows the game, but you need people in the community that have your back. And because I don't care how good you are, eventually you're going to lose. And when the going gets tough, you need guys in that foxhole that you can trust. And I'm telling you what, a good coaching staff, when they stick together, they're very hard to beat.
They are something else. I've been lucky myself to have some great coaches, you know, work with me and everything. And they're worth their weight in gold. Get your kids ready to play. How do you keep your kids up when they're getting their heads beaten in?
No,
I know
say that again, Kyle.
How do you get your kids to stay up?
Stay up during the season?
Yeah, during the season when they're getting their heads beat in. Because I know you had a tough time that first year.
You know, I really don't know. I guess I'm kind of – I kind of like Nick Saban, whereas I really believe in the process. And I enjoy the grind. And I think if you enjoy the grind, then that kind of rubs off on your kids and they enjoy the grind. You know, I'm a big believer in my life verse from a faith standpoint is Proverbs 27:17. And it says, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. And, you know, I think we've done a really good job selling our kids. And every day when we come into work, if I don't make my assistant coaches better, I've not done my job as a man that day. Mm-hmm. Every day when our kids come in the weight room or if our kids come to practice, if they don't make their teammate better, then they haven't done their job that day. And, you know, I think we do a really good job selling that to our kids. And all it is we beat it into their heads. I mean, they're not going to know the Bible verse. And they're not going to know where it comes from, but they're going to know iron sharpens iron, and they're going to know what it means. And that's kind of what we build everything on. And, you know, if you're not concentrating on – I think a lot of coaches, the biggest trap they fall in is worrying about wins and losses. And you can't do that. You have to work as hard as you can. You have to love kids, and you have to do things the right way. And if you do those three things, everything else takes care of itself.
How is – I know the answer to this question, but I have to ask it.
Go ahead.
How's your relationship with your coworkers, your faculty and administration?
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, everywhere I've been, if I have left, you know, I'll have faculty members upset that I'm leaving. And I think that's a great thing. You know, the packet I'll give my kids, and your packet's in the mail, by the way, Coach. I did get that request. But, you know, the packet I will share with parents tomorrow at our parent meeting in Pickens is the first rule I have is the teacher's always right. And, you know, I tell kids all the time, look, I will be your advocate. But if I go into a teacher – and they say you've been disrespectful, there's nothing I can say. If I'm trying to help you with your grades or help you get tutoring or whatever I need to do, and then I find out you've been a horse's rear end, there's nothing I can do. So, you know, we do weekly grade checks. We have kids fill out progress reports. And one of the questions on a progress report is, was he a gentleman this week? And I'll run you much harder for that than I will a bad grade. Our kids are going to act the right way. They're going to say yes, sir, no, sir. They're going to be able to shake your hand and look you in the eye because I found, you know, in a recruiting thing, when coaches come around, a lot of our young men don't know how to be young men. And we have to teach them that. We have to guide them. And, you know, our kids are going to be able to do those things to impress recruiters, to impress future employers, and really to get a leg up, you know, on maybe a good job one day. So, no, but our faculty, you know, I'm always the type of guy I want to do lunch duty. I want to do morning duty because I think you see your kids. I think you're able to interact with the student body. And, you know, you never know. There might be a really good basketball player out there that sees you at lunch duty, talks to you every day, and then decides, gee, I think I want to come out and be one of Coach Smith's receivers. Nothing wrong with a 6'4 kid that's never played football before coming out there and jumping up and catching a fade. So I kind of revert back to that old Bear Bryant story when he went recruiting and he went into kind of a soul food place and the guy was kind of there and he was like, I don't understand why you're eating in a restaurant. And the Bear gave him an autographed thing, went back and, you know, mailed him a picture and everything else. And then 20 years later, his grandson is one of the biggest recruits in America, and his grandfather made him go to the University of Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And you just never know from day to day who you're talking to or anything like that. And, you know, good things have a way of coming back and helping you out down the road.
You got to plant those seeds.
Yes.
You just have to plant those seeds because you never know. But that's being decent anyway. Just be good to everybody. You know, you don't have anything in the world to worry about. And I know your principal is fired up about you being there because I read the press release and he was gushing all over you. What kind of guy is he?
Oh, he's a great guy. You know, we grew up together. You know, Corey's always been a good guy. He's very black and white, which I am too. You know, what's right is right and what's wrong is wrong. And that's the way he works, and that's all he can ask for. I mean, I can go in his office, and I might not agree with everything, and I can voice concerns, but, you know, what he says goes, and I'll support it when we go out of that office, and he knows that's what he's getting. So, you know, it's just like me hiring assistant coaches. You know, principals have to kind of do the same thing, and the more people they have pulling in the correct direction, the better off the school's going to be. So, you know, I'm excited to try to get into Pickens and make it the best high school in the state of South Carolina.
So you've had an opportunity to meet with some of the people there already.
Yes.
As far as the community. Well, Christ, they know you.
that's kind of
home.
It's a lot easier than other places I've been.
Yeah, that's home. So they're going to give you a couple more years to get you right.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, now let me get into the thing because I am intrigued by this because as good as you have been, and as good as people think you are, you still have those things that you still want to learn. And I tell our kids every year, Coach, what Coach does, he dumbs up. You don't know nothing about football, and then that's the only way new things are going to get into your head.
Yeah.
How do you increase your participation? I know we touched on it a little bit. What do you do in your program to get those to go from 36 to 130?
Coach, I'll be honest with you. I really don't know. I mean, I've really been blessed. You know, we do take a very old school approach to football. I tell the kids, you know, there's going to be days you come in here and you hate me. And I actually, this isn't just lip service, we actually do it. At the end of the day, doesn't matter how bad it has been at practice, doesn't matter if I've really come down on a kid or what, I'm going to put my arm around a kid and I'm going to tell them I love them before they leave practice. And they know it's genuine.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I think that is what has increased participation. Because you look at Clovis, like it easily, you could say it was wins. At Northern Nash, honestly, you could say it was wins. At Clover, we were making major progress, and then year three, the bottom fell out. So how we were able to increase numbers from year three to year four, I really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some very important pieces of the puzzle to come back out that didn't play the year before. I really do believe that it is kids knowing you care. I think it's parents knowing you care. And you're always going to have naysayers. It doesn't matter how good you are. It doesn't matter how many games you win or anything else. You're always going to have that one parent that thinks you're a moron and thinks you don't care about their kid, you know, whatever else. The main thing is you can't let that affect your opinion of their son. and you can't let that affect how you treat anybody, their kid or anybody else. And as long as you follow that stuff, most of the time, everywhere I've been at least, you know, the numbers have greatly increased. Now, I also, cheating, those numbers could be skewed because I've never taken over a good program. I mean, Pickens High School is going to be the best situation that I've ever walked into, and they won two games last year.
Mm-hmm.
Northern Nash was on a 20-game losing streak when I took over there. Easley was 1-21 when I took over there, and Clover was 0-11. So, you know, most of the time when a new coach comes in, numbers are going to go up automatically just because kids are excited. So, you know, those numbers can be skewed a little bit that way. But, you know, being able to keep those kids out and being able to promote your program, I think that just goes into the stuff we do in the community, the our involvement in churches, and people knowing that we genuinely care about their kids. I think that is you hear tons of coaches preach love and everything else. I'm really not big on lip service. I'm big on showing it. And and I think we do a good job of that, and I think that's why I've never really left a place. Like you hear about coaches burning bridges. I've never really done that. Everywhere I've left, I feel like I could go back to and coach. In fact, I think the telltale sign for us and things that makes me feel really great about our program, Pickens and Easley is one of the oldest rivalries in the state of South Carolina. And I've had tons of kids from Easley that we coach there telling me that they want to pick his T-shirt, they want to come to games and stuff next year and support us. And to me, that means the world. Because that means you touch the kid more than just touching a school. And, you know, I've seen it all. I mean, I've been at inner-city schools, I've been at country schools, I've been a little bit everywhere. And the thing that really drives me is kids are kids. Doesn't matter what socioeconomic level they come from. Doesn't matter what environment they come from. If you show a kid love and you just pour that on them, they'll run through a brick wall for you. And that's what, I mean, I guess that's what I've seen. And I know it sounds cheesy and I know it sounds cliche. And it's probably not what people listening to this are wanting to hear. But I genuinely love my kids. They genuinely know I love them. And the parents genuinely know it. And we make great things happen because of that. I preach to them, and I know Pickens, and I might be giving away my pregame talk for the first game, but the first pregame talk I always give is in battle, and I'm still in this now, and I can't remember the guy's name. I heard it in a sermon, but everywhere I've been, he was talking. He was a former Navy SEAL, and he was talking about soldiers jumping on a grenade in battle. And, you know, he was asking the congregation, he said, why does a soldier do that? Why will he give up his life? And, you know, people were saying, you know, for the nation, for duty, and all this other stuff. And he said, no. He said, that guy jumps in that foxhole because he loves his brothers around him. And that's, you know, that's case in point. If you, and Coach, I'll guarantee you, you look back on the best teams you've had, the team chemistry has been remarkable. And the kids genuinely love each other, and they care for each other. And they'll do anything they can for the other one. And when you get that going, not only will your team be better, but those numbers will increase because people want to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something very, very special. And there's really not a magical formula for it. It's kind of like, you know, lifting weights kind of stinks when you're doing it. I mean, it makes you sore and you're hurting. And you know, it can be stinky in there and it's just not very fun. But you get in there and do it. And it's the same thing. I don't always come to school wanting to love my brother. But that's what I'm called to do, so that's what I'm going to do. And that's how we get our numbers the way we get our numbers.
Now, you said you were into selling. Another question I was going to ask you about your kids. How do you get your kids to buy into each other? What do you do? Or it happens because of these other things that are going on, or are there things that you do?
You know, I try to preach to them that it's their responsibility. Because I've tried to do, like, we used to do a team camp. You know, I've done ropes courses and I've done all this, like, leadership training and stuff. But the best teams that I've had are the most, the most touching thing I've ever seen was when I was at Easley, my second year. We were 9-4 the first year, and the next year we were returning basically everything. So we knew we were going to be pretty good. Well, our team made a pact that they wanted to practice the third round of the playoffs in South Carolina. You know, that's the upper state championship or lower state championship. And if you get to that point, you're pretty good at any level. I mean, that kind of says you've had a really good season. Well, we lost to Greenwood in the second round that year. We lost two games that year, and they were both to Greenwood. And they won a state championship that season. But our kids lost in the second round. Well, I was going to my in-laws' house for Thanksgiving, and I had two of my sons with me. I drive by Easley High School, and I see movement on the football field. And there should not have been movement on the football field. But I had made a big deal talking that whole season about we were going to eat breakfast together before our Thanksgiving practice. Closer, and we had gates and a big wall around it and everything, and it was locked up. But I went and unlocked it, and it was every senior on that football team was out there with Bojangles biscuits eating on the football field. And when I walked up, they said, "Coach, we might be in trouble, but we made a promise that we were going to eat biscuits together on Thanksgiving, and we were going to do it." And, you know, they apologized, and I said, "Guys, you know, don't be sorry. I'm not going to tell a soul. You're safe." But they kind of overachieved. Even though we had made that pact, to be honest with you, they had really overachieved that year. We weren't nearly as athletic as what our record showed. But because they loved each other and we did nothing, the kids did it all. You know, and that's really kind of difficult now with, I really think, you know, society kind of tells kids to be selfish. And but when kids themselves can break down those barriers, great things happen. I really do believe that coaches can only do so much of that. I think you can tell them. Kids are actually hanging out, doing stuff, they're only going to be so close. I think that goes far beyond football.
Yeah. I would be remiss to not ask this question because, you know, we all sound hunky-dory and everything. And, again, you got your scars and everything. What do you do with that bad apple that you have?
Well, I mean, it really, I'll be honest with you, 2 years ago it cost us a season. And he didn't do enough for me to kick him off the team. But he was very cancerous through the organization. And once again, if this was 10 years ago, I think I'd give you a different answer. Because when I first started coaching, you could kick a kid off the team and you were going to have full support from everybody and didn't really have to worry about anything. Now you almost have to wait until somebody screws up something pretty bad. And, you know, I talk to the bad apple. I try to get teammates to talk to the bad apple. And you try to clear him up. But at the same time, he ain't going to play. I don't care how good he is. If you can't trust a kid, he will end up beating you. And, and you know, if you know a kid doesn't, it's not really about having my back. I could care less whether a kid likes me or not. But if you know a kid doesn't care for his teammates and he's going to dig his teammates every chance he gets, then he's going to be standing beside me on Friday because I'm not putting my job on the line for him. You know, and once again, like I said, I could care less if the kid likes me. I mean, that to me, that doesn't reflect him playing. But if I know for a fact that he's a cancer to his teammates, he ain't going to be playing too much.
Do you
and
have
most of the time
rules?
Think if any rules?
Right, I'm sorry. Yeah,
I've got a point system. I've got a coach in Alabama that I got it from, and it goes, coach, it goes in to everything from drug use to a misdemeanor offense to all kinds of stuff. And the way I do it, we're on a point system. If you get up to 15 points, you're kicked off the team. And you can make up 1 point each day by running a mile after practice. Mm-hmm. And it makes it easy. It's very cut and dry. I have all the players sign it before the year, and it's a list of like 15 things. And that's all I worry about. I mean, and most everything, you know, I've done this for 16 years, and I've never had an offense not on there that wasn't addressed. So, you know, it works out pretty well for us.
What do you do with your kids as far as academics? I mean, I mean, you got those smart ones. I don't be too much concerned with the smart ones. What I'm concerned with most in the program, those guys who just don't get it. What do you do to help those kids? What kind of
things
do you have in place?
We do the weekly progress report, and you know, you have to be careful because you need to know. And one of the reasons I have was the gentleman this week on the progress report, did he turn in his homework, was because, you know, I need to know whether it's a lack of effort or if it's a lack of intelligence, because you're going to have to deal with those things two different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if it's a lack of effort, which most high school kids it is, then that's an easy fix. If you've got a lack of effort in the classroom, it just means you need more effort after practice running with me.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time I can straighten that out. Now, lack of intelligence, we will work extremely hard to get extra tutoring sessions, and that's when it comes in really handy for the teachers to have your back. Because, you know, if you have a kid that needs that extra help, most of the time if you've done right by the faculty, they'll do right by you and get that kid the study hall and everything that they need. And, you know, I'm not above letting kids out of the first hour of practice to go
mm-hmm.
to a study hall session to make sure they're doing right. Now, that's not for the kids if it's a lack of effort.
Yeah.
You know, if you didn't study for a biology test, you come in with 60, that's your problem. That ain't mine.
Mm-hmm.
But if you genuinely studied and you just didn't get it, then we've got to get you help, because in the long run, that grade is going to be a lot more important than whether we won or lost on Friday night. So, you know, I think we, you know, with those progress reports, kids are normally pretty worried about that thing when they have to turn it in on Wednesday. So we really don't have that many grade issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. Well, as long as you keep them accountable, you don't have that issue with a lot of players. Those guys who, again, don't give the effort, those are mostly the ones you got to deal with and everything.
Absolutely.
Now, who are some of the people that you look up to in this business?
The ones, honestly, the biggest one is the guy I learned from. You know, coming out of college, you know, I played football for 12 years through rec ball in college, and I didn't know how little I knew until I started working for Coach Holt. And we still talk a ton during football season. Don't talk as much as we need to after. But B.W. Holt's definitely very high up on the list. The entire staff at the Citadel, you know, Ron Boyd is a great offensive lineman. He played in the West Virginia Interathletic Conference too. They do a great job. I try to steal as much as I can from them. Their line comes off the ball. When Alan Sitterly was a coach at Daniel, when he was at Lexington, I went down and spent a couple of days with him. A lot of our offensive line stuff, really in wing T stuff, we stole from Coach Sitterly. We're a heavy hand team. We come off the ball hard. That's just what we do. And then, Coach, everything else, I try to steal from guys like you, guys that are wingers themselves, you know, you, Tim Murphy, Kalinda. I mean, I've researched about everybody. And, you know, if there's one thing that I can take from each guy, I try to do that. I think it's very important for young coaches to go to clinics. And, shoot, now with technology the way it is, you can get on YouTube and you can find highlights or, you know, anything you need for about any offense out there. And and those things are great. But, you know, I guess the biggest thing I've learned is there are so many great coaches out there. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. What you have to do is find something that you believe in that works, and then you find coaches like Joey Price at Wallace Rose Hill High School. Battle Holly at East Duplin in Eastern North Carolina. Jason Battle at Rocky Mountain High School. You find guys with like philosophies that you have, and you find out what their successes have been, what their failures have been, and you network. And, you know, we're in a great profession where people are willing to share just about anything, and you build your program that way. Then, you know, I'm not smart enough to have an original idea.
Mm-hmm.
Everything I've got, I've stolen from somebody. That's the biggest thing. I mean, just like when I was single wing, I mean, we never talked over the phone, but I think I've watched every Scotch Branch highlight that's out there. So, we stole some of the shifting stuff. I put my terminology in it. But, you've got to find those guys, and you've got to try to emulate them. And if you do that, you know, great things happen.
Well, I think that's the key to everything. You know, you find people where you want to go, you get in their hip pockets, and you just roll with them because they've already blazed a path for you. I think people get in trouble, whereas they want to put their own little twist in there before they learn the whole thing, when really you don't have to do it.
Just do what they did. I mean, this game's what, 120 years old? There's only 22 people on the field at a time. There's only so many ways them cats can line up. So, you just got to find it, and you've got to learn a system. And it's kind of like you said with those people that will only be wingers for a year. I don't care if you're wing, T, spread, what you are, be something.
Yeah.
And learn every single thing about it because, you know, studies have said you're an expert after you do something for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So if you've only ran the offense you're running for 3 years, forget the kids. You don't even know the stuff.
That's right.
So, you know, after you've run some for about 7 years, you've got a pretty good grasp on what you need to do to troubleshoot that thing.
That's right. No, you got to have an identity, and I think that's where a lot of guys miss it at. You got to be known for something. And you're known for something and your kids know that you're known for something and everybody else know that you're known for something, they are no surprise.
You are correct. Correct.
Well, I'm laughing because when I came here, the guys asked me, we going to run that thing? I said, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's all I know.
Well, Coach, I'll be honest with you. Before I ever knew you, when I took over at Easley, we're playing Buford in the first round of the playoffs. And I'm shaking the guy's hand before the game. I'd never heard of the hammer. I never even heard of it. But we were running double wing. And the defensive coordinator comes up to me before the game. He's like, man, I hate seeing that hammer. It took me like 15 minutes talking to that cat before I realized he was talking about our offense. I was like, who in the world calls this hammer? So, then I started researching and found out that's you. So, that's actually what got me on the Scotch Branch stuff. So, so your terminology is well known, especially in the lower part of the state.
Well, we just have fun. You know, and, someone asked me, where'd you come up with that name? And one of the kids, I remember the kid right now, his name is Keith Pearson. And we were huddling around. You know, I hate to call it by those numbers. We don't use numbers and everything. And we were just trying to figure out what to call a play. We don't want to call it a toss. We don't want to call, that was a normal name for it. And she just said, well, Coach, just call it the hammer. That's all we do anyway. We hammer people down. You got it.
There you go.
And that's how I got named.
There you go.
Yeah, the kids bought into it. They believe in it. And you can tell them that they can be successful with it. And we were focused into that, and they believe in it, and they got it. And next thing you know, all that success came to those kids and everything. Well,
yes,
I had you on the telephone long enough. I know you got to go see Mama and the kids and everything in there. Is it your parents that you visit in there in Pickens right now, or is your wife's parents?
Yes, I'm actually – my wife's parents have settled in Seneca, but my parents still – you could – my parents and actually my entire family lives just north of Highway 11 towards North Carolina in Pickens County. And I'm actually driving to my parents' house right now. And when I'm in town now before we move, I just spend the night with him. And it's good, especially since I've been gone for 20 years. So, you know, I get to see and talk to people I haven't talked to in a while, and it's really been a blessing.
Now, are you already working at the school, or are you working at other? You got to wait till the end.
No,
of the year.
I'm going to teach my contract out at Clover, and like we left on a very good terms. Clover understood me wanting to go home, and the superintendent's been great. So I take about 2 days off every other week to come down and make sure everything's rolling at Pickens. And, like, the next 2 days, I'll be meeting with both feeder middle schools. We're having a parent meeting tomorrow night, checking up on the weight room, make sure all that stuff's going. And then tomorrow night, we're having our first offensive installation meeting with our rec, middle school, and high school coaches. So trying to get everybody going the same direction. And then the entire month of May during spring ball, I've got enough days where I'm kind of taking off and coming down here and just spending – I'll basically work at Clover through April and then take the month of May pretty much off and to work on spring ball. But luckily, I mean, and not a lot of people have the type of situation I'm in. My superintendent and principal at Clover understand, and they've been very supportive through this whole process. And that's one of those things. You make sure you don't ever tick off a former employer. And you know, they've been very gracious, which it helps me too. They just hired Brian Lane at Clover, and Brian's a great guy. And Brian will be wanting, you know, he's going to be throwing it every freaking play. But Brian's coming in, and, you know, but let's be honest, me and Brian are friends. I know I'm very excited because I know he's a God-fearing man that loves the kids. So I have no reservations about leaving my boys at Clover under his care. But it's awkward when you have two head coaches there. So they're not gonna think anything about me driving down and getting what I need to get done at Pickett. So that's a very good thing.
That's good. Okay, that's good. Well, Chad, I really appreciate you coming on, man. I have learned so much tonight. You know, and those guys who are listening, everything, and the guys who will be listening because we're going to have this up on a podcast, and so you are going to be. Listen throughout the whole country when this thing is over.
Fantastic. Well, Coach, I appreciate you having me on, and if I can ever do anything, just holler.
You know I will. You know, I dumb up every year, so, you know, if I got to find, there's no shame in this game here to ask a question, you know. You know, you got to ask a question.
I got you.
It's never about you. It's always about the kids, you know. Whatever you
absolutely.
Have to do,
you're 100% right.
Yeah. Okay, man. Well, you have a good time, and thanks again. I really appreciate it, okay?
Thank you. I appreciate it, too. God bless.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Well, guys, that's the great Chad Smith from Pickens High School, and I could have gone on and on and on and on because, you know, there's so much to learn from this guy. Anytime that you can take schools and get the participation that he gets from those kids and make the impact on those kids' lives, and he's done it in 3 or 4 situations. So he's legit, and you can see that he really believes in what he does. Well, we're going to sign out tonight. This weather is really kicking up and everything, and I'm going to get going. Next week, we'll have Corey Parker, the famous Corey Parker, on from River Rouge High School in Detroit, Michigan. Great things are happening for this young man right here, and he's doing, I mean, the things that we had a couple of years ago that he did at River Rouge, he's even gotten better at it. So he's going to be our guest next week. And, you know, we just want to bring the things to you that matters the most. Again, if you know anybody that's running the wing, you know, get them to us and so we can get them on the show because we only learn from each other, you know, and this is a good venue to learn and to just see what's going on with other coaches and everything.
So, saying that, I'm going to bid you a good night, and God bless, and have a nice weekend. Bye-bye. And by the way, before I get off, go and tell somebody tonight you love them. Bye-bye and have a nice weekend. Have a good week.